welcome to the Comic-Cast, Ireland's number one comic podcast. I'm Craig.
And I'm Liam.
And we're here with an interview special. This week you went to interview Maeve Clancy.
Yes.
Creator of a brilliant webcomic, Flatmates, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. You've done your homework.
I've done my research. That's why I don't go to the interviews. I stay behind the scenes.
Well, yes, so she does this webcomic, Flatmates, and then she's also a pop-up artist, she's an illustrator, she's an animator, she's a production designer.
Yes.
Is there anything she can't do?
Well, tell me, you're the one interviewed her.
No, because she was like the perfect interviewee.
Yeah.
Enjoy this interview. I don't know where to start. Illustrator, animator, cartoonist, production designer, pop-up artist, Maeve Clancy. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
I kind of want to start with Flatmates, your webcomic, and soon to be collected in print. How would you describe this? How would you describe the story of it to people, the characters?
I suppose the byline is it's a bit of friendship, urban life, and talking shite. Which is, it's kind of what it's about. I suppose more, the longer I do it, the more it becomes really about friendship, actually. And that's, I started it when I was living in the UK, and it was very much about missing Dublin, really, I suppose, and missing friends, and missing a group of people who kind of keep you in check, really. So that's really, actually, that's a lot of what Flatmates is about. Originally, it was with two characters they're drawn as dogs. The main reason they're dogs is they're two characters I'd drawn, and as soon as I'd drawn them for something that was completely different, I knew exactly what kind of characteristics they had, and they had very definite personalities. And I had made a lot of animated films before, and every time I made a film, I was accused of putting people I knew in them, in some of the characters, the way I designed characters, not on purpose. So I figured this is a really good way of having characters that nobody could say was them. But it doesn't make any difference. Even the other day, one of my brothers asked me, he said, "That character, is that me?" And I had to just vehemently deny it. But everyone else says, "Is that him?" And I'm like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. So that was kind of part of it. And then I started basically because I was in the UK, and then I also was doing a lot of animation at the time, finishing an animated film that was taking years and years to make. I was waiting for my sound guy to get back to me with the sound for a long time. And I started the comic kind of as therapy, really, I suppose. Okay. And also to do something that finished every week.
Were you doing it when you started it? Were you actually putting it online, or were you just doing it?
Putting it online every week.
Oh, okay.
Part of the reason of putting it online really was because I'd made 3 or 4 animated shorts, and I'd never made anything that I'd written, because I was very, I was very hesitant about putting written ideas out there. And I'd written some stuff, but I really didn't like it. And I'd have no problem with putting drawings, film, animation, because it's what I'd be more comfortable with. And I had this idea for these guys who were flatmates, and I was so hesitant about putting it out there that I thought if I put it online where anyone can see it, it might get me over this fear. So it did actually work, and it meant that I did a lot more writing. So obviously I'm writing it every week, and it's led to me writing more stuff that I'd started but was pretty, like, didn't really have the confidence to put out there otherwise.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said you started when you were in England, because I was going to say there's lots of kind of like Dublin, you know, it's very... You know, obviously set in Dublin.
I think earlier on, there's a lot more Dublin references than there is now, and even there are more obvious references. Whereas now, it's more even in the language and behaviour. I think it's definitely set in Dublin, Ireland, because I suppose I'm less conscious of it, I think. So for the whole of the first year, I was living in the UK still, and not liking it very much, I suppose, actually, really is why I started it, and finding the culture really foreign and alien, and just not getting into it. I think because, I mean, I lived abroad quite a bit, and I've never been homesick, and that's the first time I actually went, I really miss certain things that I really, really miss.
Yeah,
and that's,
I suppose,
what I end up putting into the comic.
Yeah, it's it, because even one thing that springs to mind is the one strip where they go to Make and Do Night on Mondays. Like, okay. Oh,
I had just been to Make and Do Night. Yeah, there is a lot of that, actually. I suppose stuff comes into it that I've just been doing. Just been thinking about, or someone I know has just done. It's generally stuff I do, actually, or it's often stuff I do, or stuff I do that I think is great and that would be nice for other people to know about, or I suppose stuff I do that I think they would really like, as in the characters. It's funny with the writing of it, it's a lot of effort to begin with, and then I definitely got to a point where the drawings got a lot better and it settled into a much more defined style, and then I didn't have to think so much about a whole story. I would just think of a situation and put them in it. And I don't have a story. I don't have it fully worked out when I start drawing it. So like every week is 2 pages. And usually by about the third or fourth panel on the first page, I know how it's going to end. But it takes until then for it to kind of weasel its way through.
Okay.
And sometimes I don't know how it's going to end. And they're the really, really slow weeks to get it written. But yeah, it's funny. It's got a lot easier. And the characters definitely define what comes out much more, which has made it much easier, you know. Yeah.
It's an interesting kind of format or size, because it's not really, you know, it's not kind of your typical webcomic.
It's not a strip.
It's not kind of it's not a strip.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's going online, but it's kind of clearly looks like it, you know, it's fit perfectly into a, you know, a volume of print.
Yeah, not on purpose, actually. It's more that I've done a few ones in strips, like trying to fit them into a 4 or 5 panel strip, which is very difficult. And actually, I wrote a few of them about a year ago thinking it'd be really good if I could convert this into something that could go into a paper or something. Very difficult to write, and I end up writing very different ones because it's kind of soap opera-ish. And often what happens over the course of 1 week, it's quite slow to develop, and it's more, sometimes there are other things going on that is half the humour. It's not always a punchline-y one either.
Okay.
And so that is the way I tend to write it. So I'd love to write it shorter because it saved me a lot of time, but fitting it into 2 pages, it seems to be the length of the kind of stories I'm writing and the way it just paces itself. Mm. Yeah, I'm not really in control a lot of the time, to be honest. It's just the way, it's the only way I managed to do it. But funny, actually, in print, I have a proof of the book, and it works really well as a book. Probably better than it works online,
okay.
I think.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
Because online I'd love to be able to put a double page spread in, it just won't fit in a browser. But it looks much better, actually, even, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were telling me just before we started recording about the actual print version of Flatmate. So it's like the first collected volume.
Yeah.
How did you manage to get from, you know, the kind of 90 plus strips down to the
30?
20?
Well, actually, part of putting it online is every now and then, I suppose, I involve readers in it quite a bit. So when it was a year old, I'd have a competition for like people send me in their name, get a poster. And from that, I got such a response to that, I thought I should actually get people involved in the comic a little bit. So I'd say about 6 months ago, I introduced 2 new characters and got people to name them. And the people who named them got a prize. And actually, it was 2 kids I was teaching came up with the names, because they had brilliant names and really good reasons for why these characters would be given those names. So they won the prize. Then at Christmas, I had a Christmas comic where I asked anyone who wanted to be in it to send me their names, and I had a party scene with 70 or 80 of my readers in it, which was a nightmare. But it was great when it was done, but I was up till 6 a.m. on Christmas morning trying to get it finished. Yeah, great idea at the time, kind of idea. But then, so similarly enough with whittling down the episodes, I know myself, when I look back at a lot of the early episodes, I like them a lot more than I like more recent ones.
Okay.
Mainly because there's a bit of distance there and you can actually look at it and go, oh yeah, that actually did work. And often ones I didn't like at the time, when you look at them with a few of them in a row, it does work quite well. So I thought it'd be good to get people involved. So I just put a thing up on one of the comics one of the week. I put a thing up online asking people to submit in their lists, which is a lot of work. It takes hours to read 90 comics and then whittle it down to, you whittle it down to about half, and then getting 30 out of those 45, 50 is really difficult. But it's great. So like about 10 or 15 people gave me lists, so I sent them all a drawing because I figured for all their hard work they deserve something really good, and most of them overlapped, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had a list of what I thought was good, and then there's 2 or 3 that were on everyone's list, and then a lot of other ones. Yeah, everyone had a couple of crazies in there. You're like, no one else chose that one. Or even ones that I go, I don't even get that. Like, I sometimes write it and I don't even get it. And they're often ones other people go, yeah, I really like that one. It was great. There's loads in that. No idea. So it was great. But it was really good to get that feedback, actually, because it also made me review loads of them and realise what ones I thought were working best. And some ones that I had thought went on for a long time, as in they were stories that went over 3 or 4 episodes. I had kind of thought they were long-winded, but in fact, when I look back on them again, they did work quite well, and people liked the series ones a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I selected my 30, and then formatted the book and sent it off.
Did you find you had to lose out on maybe strips that were just kind of what's the word, kind of self-contained, because you had to, you know, say, keep a story going, you know, show at least four of them?
Not really, because there was, say, in that, in the ones I selected, there's two or three lots of two and one lot of three, like a story that's three or four episodes in a row. So, and then there's a lot of self-contained ones. Because actually, of all the ones that overlapped, everyone had, they were all the self-contained ones that were just one idea. And more than the idea, they were just how the characters in it reacted in their very specific ways. That was really humorous. And actually, I found after I made these lists, I started writing a lot more of those very much character-driven stories, because I thought they worked best, and actually seemed what most people seem to react best to as well. But it's very interesting. Trying to whittle stuff down is much harder than you think. And you can't help but have a real personal attachment to some stories just because they're like something nice that you did, that you put into a comic, but it mightn't have worked actually. Yeah, so it's funny.
Again, you were telling me this before we started recording, but if you could tell me again about the publishing of this and who's publishing it.
Okay, so it's the Verbal Arts Centre in Derry. So I didn't really know anything about them, and there's a guy up there called David Campbell who's their comic artist in residence. What an amazing title.
It is pretty good.
Yeah, so he runs the 2D Festival in Derry, which I didn't even know about, to be honest. I mean, I'm kind of new enough to comics, so he runs the 2D Festival, and they had, I think he's been there probably maybe over two years anyway, and he's been building up kind of printing and publishing facilities up there in order to publish comics. So I think now that they might be letting them out to people kind of as a commercial venture, maybe subsidised, but also they want to publish in Irish comics. Like, his job, I think, really is to promote Irish comics in general. So the 2D Festival is obviously part of that, and then printing and publishing some Irish comics is the next step. So Phil Barrett is doing one, David himself is doing one, and then he asked me to do one. So because I suppose with Flatmates, they're kind of ready made, they're ready for print. And so like I said, I've just got the proof back, and he's going to have copies for me for Bristol, so that'll be May. I'll have a load of copies, hopefully.
It must be pretty exciting to be kind of, I mean, that's kind of like the first, obviously there's loads of independent Irish comics, but the first kind of like small kind of press.
Yeah,
you know,
it's completely brilliant. I'm so used to, like, from various things that I do, you're so used to doing every part of everything yourself, and doing the push, the promoting, even like the, I mean, I formatted it myself. Thankfully, my flatmate's a graphic designer, so she got roped into helping me put it together. And I would have trained as a graphic designer, actually, so not that you know it now. But it's very handy to be able to, I literally formatted it, sent it off, and then I got a book back. Now, that's brilliant, just so that you're not involved in all these other in-betweeny stages. And then once he publishes it, like, I get a load of copies to sell, but he also then promotes it, brings it to other festivals. I think he gives it to distributors and tries to sell it in shops, and it just means, like, for once having somebody else do all the horrible stuff, really, like all the stuff you just don't want to be doing, is amazing. That is, it's completely spoiled. And he's, like I was saying to you before, he's it's kind of an experiment. They're just trying to figure out what's the best way of doing this. So he's open to kind of any suggestion on where it could go or what to do with it, and which is great, actually. It's like having a publisher, but 10 times better. You know, it's fantastic. So, and he wants to keep going and do more of them. So it's going to be really interesting, actually, having that kind of going on, actually.
So it's going to be launched at the 2D
It's
Festival.
Going to be launched at 2D. I'll have copies for, because I'm going to do the comic fair in Bristol in May. So he'll give me a lot of copies for that. But I think they launch it then in 2D, which is June, the first weekend in June, I think.
And then it'll be available on your website as well?
Yeah, I'll probably have it available on the site, yeah, I'd say so. Even my mum said to me, I'll get rid of some of them for you. I was like, thanks mummy. I think she means sell, but I'm not sure. But yeah, no, because a lot of people who read have asked me, once they knew the book was coming, they're asked me about buying it and stuff. So yeah, it'd be cool, just even to have it, to be honest. Having it in book format's amazing. It's so different, and it's I kind of saw it and went, oh, that looks great, and then later on I was looking at going, this is deadly. I've been carrying it around for the last 2 weeks just in case I meet anyone who hasn't seen it yet. It's so exciting. It's brilliant to see it in a book format, and it's, like I said to you before, it's lovely. Like, it's really well printed, it looks great.
I just had a look at it. It's very impressive.
Yeah, it's great.
So you're working on two other graphic novels?
No, I'm working on one other graphic novel, but not right now. I'm doing, I have an exhibition in on in a month's time.
Okay. So in paintings
or cut paper.
Oh, okay.
But it actually involves some comic work as well. Not that they're ready yet. Basically, it's I did this cut paper video cut paper installation for a music video, and
the Lisa Hannigan one,
yeah, for her I Don't Know song. So this gallery in the UK, in a place called Solihull at South Birmingham, they contacted me because they were doing a paper art season and asked could I lend that installation over for their group show, and it's not mine, so I said I'm not sure, I'll have to ask. And in the meantime, I'd sent them other work I'd done. They then contacted me and said, well, do you want to do a solo show instead? We'll give you the gallery space. And I went, okay, thanks, that'd be fantastic. So that's what I've done. So I've been over in Birmingham doing loads of drawings. I've got two kind of large enough gallery spaces to do it in. And what I'm doing is two cityscapes. So one is Dublin, one's Birmingham. They're both spaces that you kind of have to, it's in layers, so you have to enter into it and go right to the middle. And then there's stories I'm researching that are about... like I said, I lived in the UK for a year. I found it really alien, actually, just as it culturally was so different. And my mum is English. So I was in an area very much not far from where she grew up. And I found it really, I've lived all over, I found it really odd, you know. So I started looking into this. The show is called An Outsider in Your Mother's Land. So looking at this concept, being somewhere you maybe should belong but you don't. So the Birmingham landscape is going to have my story and then stories of other Irish people with their connections with England. So there's a lot of Irish immigrants there. It's also, oddly enough, where a lot of Irish women go to get abortions. There's lots of kind of this kind of cross stories. And then the Dublin cityscape, so it's bits, like it's a large cut paper scene with various layers. I've been looking at other stories of to do with people who were born in the UK but came back here in their teens. So like I'm 31, a lot of people my age, that is kind of what happened to them. So they came back in their teens with an English accent, yet are more Irish than I am. And an English accent here can be very alienating, hugely so. So they're the kind of stories I'm researching for the Irish ones. So I haven't written them yet because I'm too busy cutting bits of paper out. But yeah, so I will obviously have that all done in a month's time. But that's at the moment, that's kind of taking up most of what I do.
How did you get started in cut paper? Because it's not something that I was aware of.
Actually, mostly because of that video. For the Lisa Hannigan video, she had an idea to do with cut paper stuff. She'd been looking at, you know, that guy Rob Ryan, he's an illustrator, does lots of book covers and stuff. And she had asked about this. It was her idea of sitting there, cutting up its paper, and a landscape is built around her. It was amazing, a lovely job, but it was also a very kind of short time. So I met her, I think, on the Thursday. I sketched out what I thought she might want, drew it out properly the next day, bought the paper, spent the weekend cutting out with her. My sister helped out, her mum helped out. Then we went wallpapers an underground car park on the Monday. Then built a wooden structure to support this whole thing, because you can't drill into reinforced concrete walls. So built a wooden structure to support the cat that goes side to side and holds up the paper. Cut it out, put it all together, took it all back down again, and then did a 24-hour shoot to film the video the next day. Yeah.
Intensive.
It was kind of intense. Yeah. It was brilliant. It was fantastic fun. I did, at one point, I did kind of hit a wall where we'd been working nonstop, and my sister was helping me out, and this other guy, he was meant to be part of the lighting crew. We just submerged him into our department, and we'd been working and getting loads of stuff done, and basically cutting out lots of extra parts as well as what had to be hung. And we eventually got to a point at 5 a.m. where it was nearly over, but we had basically all our work was done. We were just waiting for everything to be done. And I hit a bit of a wall, and actually my sister had to kind of talk me down from going mental. Because we'd had next to no sleep for about 2 or 3 days, and I was like, I'm sick of it, and she just had to go, okay, let's get some chocolate. So, but it was a fantastic job, and the video looked amazing when it was done.
Yeah.
And then I was planning to do a joint exhibition with a friend of mine, who, he's an illustrator, mostly draws for a living. I had loads of drawings I was going to put into it. And then from that, I started turning all my drawings into cut paper drawings, because I had done a lot of negative, positive kind of stuff before, like lino prints. I'd done an animation where the whole thing was done not by drawing lines, but by cutting out the bits I didn't want. So it was kind of, it's a similar kind of way of thinking, but I just found the cut paper really interesting. And then for the video we had used, I'd found wallpaper lining paper. It's basically like plain wallpaper.
Okay.
Just as a material for that, it was excellent. You get them in big long strips, it's really cheap, you don't get paper cuts off it, and under lighting for video, it'll take a lot of white light but won't reflect it back. So it was like my wonder material. So I've just been kind of using that nonstop because you can do an awful lot with it, actually. So from there I was doing a lot of cutouts, and I've been doing kind of more ever since. I still do lots of drawing and other things, but when it came to this show, they wanted an installation anyway. The paper cutouts was something I was dying to get back to, so it's a great opportunity to be said, here's a gallery space, please fill it with stuff. It's very unusual, actually. Very unusual. So it's a brilliant opportunity, actually. Really good.
Leading on from that, something I'm absolutely fascinated by is pop-up work.
Oh, yeah.
How does one get started in...
Lisa Harnigan asked me to make a pop-up book. Actually, more specifically, her brother Jamie, who I'd made a film with, The Boy with the Ever Open Jaw. It was an animation we made in 2005. He wrote it, I animated it, and we co-directed it. So that's how I've done the work for Lisa, really. It's through Jamie. So I had been living in the UK, and he contacted me about help doing something on this video of hers. He'd written a script for it, so he would write and make films, really. So he'd written a script for it and storyboarded it, and then asked me to do the pop-up. So I bought a pop-up book in a second-hand shop, took it apart, figured if it's a lot easier now if it's for screen and for a video. You basically can only pop up one direction. You know, okay. you pop up flat up so that the camera can see it. So I learned one fold and two or three little twiddly bits, you know, she could play around with. And to be honest, we were very short in time. We had to make it in 3 or 4 weeks. We had to make it for a Christmas gig. And I literally just arrived back in the country when we started making it, and I was doing other work at the same time. So we did a few intensive days out at his mum and dad's house, with his mum feeding us gourmet food. She's an amazing cook. And just made all the pages in trial, and then made them all straight. And we were really tight for time, but I mean, once I know what I'm doing, I don't draw in pencil. I can just draw straight in marker and do the whole thing straight, cut out, got him to cut a load of it, stuck the whole lot together. Yeah, it was busy. Another one. They're always kind of busy, those things. But so from that, actually, the pop-up was great. I've been doing...
Was that the first...
pop-up
like
book?
When you've just...
Yeah, that was
work,
it.
That's
amazing. Well, it's kind of illustration. It's just you're popping them up. So
yeah, I guess.
I don't know. It's like I did animation for years, but I'd always do drawing, making 3D set design. So... it's not, like, once you're able to make stuff and you can visualise stuff in 3D and it's all the same
and
kinds of skills.
It,
yeah, it's not so different, really. But yeah, pop-up was great, actually. Someone asked me about making another pop-up book at the moment from that, actually. And I've done some workshops with kids. I did some at the 24-Hour Comics Day.
Yes, yeah.
Very hungover. Oh my God. never do pop-up book workshops with luminous pink paper when you're dying of a hangover. It was awful. But it's great. It's really interesting, actually, because the kids were young enough. Probably 6 up, but they all got it straight away, and it's a cool thing to do, actually. It's really good fun. I really like it. So yeah, I'm meant to make another one now next month for a publisher or something.
That's what I was going to ask. Would you consider doing one for like print? But obviously that's
It's not actually for print. This is an interesting one. It's a publisher contacted me asking if I'd make one to promote them. So their motto is Think Big. Their new motto is Think Big. So it's a pop-up book that would be the size of the Lisa Hannigan, so big, and turn the pages, and it goes through all their main famous authors with a little pop-up scenario for each one. And basically they've actually, the guy who contacted me is this kind of marketing consultant they're dealing with, who they had asked him to provide a brochure, and he thought it'd be much more interesting if a pop-up book, giant pop-up book was made, they film and they give people the film as their brochure, and then it's up on YouTube and whatever else.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Yeah, so that, I think, it's gone ahead now. I'll probably get a definite word in it this week, but it's great.
Animation.
Yeah.
You mentioned there. I should probably really ask you what you did in college, or how you kind of got.
I went to NCAD and did graphics.
Okay.
So I did graphic design. I suppose, actually, talking of doing loads of things, I definitely went into NCAD thinking I might do sculpture, and then didn't like sculpture. Didn't really want to go into the fine art department. Didn't want to go into craft. I was looking at metals. And it's kind of by a process of eliminating everything else, I went into graphics, really, I suppose. In NCAD, you do art, you do first year core, which is where you do everything, which is fantastic. And then you have to specialise in one thing, which I found very difficult. I think a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to graphics because I thought it definitely illustration and drawing. Actually, mostly because drawing was quite big there at the time. And so I did that for 3 years. I have to admit, I did struggle with the design end of it for quite a while, until I realised in third year that a lot of us in our class were huge into film and illustration and animation. and not all into graphics. I'd say our class is probably split 50-50. And so half of us just ended up going off and we made lots of films and stuff in our degree shows. Apparently it was banned from there on in. But it was interesting. Actually, definitely, I was very lucky in my college class because there were so many of us who were very similar. And I'd work with a lot of those friends still. And I definitely still see most of my college class was a lot of us are involved in the same things again and again. So, yeah, so I did that. I knew I wanted to do, by the time I finished graphics, I knew I wanted to do a bit of animation. I did an animated short as one of my degree pieces. Then moved to New Zealand for a year, got into an animation company, kind of doing scanning or something. And when I was there, I learned, they taught me how to do the kind of compositing and post-production of animation. Came back to Ireland and started a short film, made the film, and then got grants from the film board to make my next two or three films. So I made two through the Irish Flash scheme. And then I'd made a kind of Super 8 documentary short. And then I made, what else did I make?
Is there a stop motion one
that was a music video for a friend of mine. Okay. Yeah, so I hadn't really done any stop motion, so I thought that would be a great way to learn. So, and I spent most of the time building the set, to be honest, which is actually, was probably the best thing to do because you could spend lots of time on, you know, the backgrounds. But, yeah, so I suppose, yeah, doing that, I was doing a lot of storyboarding for film, production design for film. But a lot of those things are kind of things. Like, production design was, I really not fell into, but just did a favour for some friends. And actually, any of those film favours are big favours. Like, a favour, a month of my life doing production design for a pilot they never did anything with. But then I started getting asked to do films. And because I was doing a lot of animation, I used to do the production design really as a way of working with a group of people, doing some kind of teamwork kind of work, being sick of people, and then it'd be over and you'd go back to working on your own. So I did that a bit and then started getting paid work doing production design, which was a laugh from working for free, being a slave, to suddenly getting paid properly to do work.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I do a bit of that still, very rarely now, and probably only one or two.
Rarely with the animation or the production design?
No, production design rarely, animation very little now. Okay. I made that film, The Boy at the Open Jaw with Jamie, and I made two or three films around the same time, the model animation Sedna, The Boy with the Ever Open Jaw, which is an Irish Flash. And I made that documentary short, Dan's Chair, I made the Super 8 one. Made them at the same time. Then started a new one called The Masterpiece, which my brother had written. And that was a 10-minute short that I decided just not bother even applying for funding, just go and make it. And at one point, so worked it for 3 years, really. Very long time. But I'd started working it, went away to France for 3 months to finish it. And redesigned it so that it was incredibly complex and really detailed, but I liked it much more. And so came back and then was working on it really on and off, I suppose, for another year and a half. And it was at the end of that I started doing the comics, mostly because, to be honest, I just thought 3 years is way too long to get one idea out there. And an idea or a story morphs so much over 3 years that the thing becomes very inconsistent and it's very hard to keep a thread running on it, and animating everything on your own, which is how I like to do it. You just can't really do that, actually. If you want to do anything over about 2 minutes, you just can't maintain one kind of mind on it.
Yeah.
I started doing the comics, and then it just seemed so easy in comparison to animation. Draw it once and it's done. And also, maybe because I started doing the writing, where I suddenly realised all these other things I wanted to do, I could get out and I could tell lots of stories at once. Like the thought of the other graphic novel I'm working on, the Inheritance one, I started when I was in Berlin last year, and realised, as a short story, and realised when I came back and did a bit more work on it, that there was loads of the things I could really tie in with it, and it was definitely becoming much more of a lengthy thing. Mm. And I know that so I'm going away to Berlin this summer, actually, to work on it, but also to take a bit of a holiday, take some time out. But actually, a lot of it I should really draw over there because of the buildings and backgrounds and stuff. But I can do it in 2.5 months. I can get a graphic novel drawn in 2.5 to 3 months. I couldn't draw a 3-minute animation in 3 months. So
yeah.
I have to admit, I still love animation, but just the length of time and just the fact you can't get something told while it's still fresh. That's what started to frustrate me. So I need GIMPs, is what I figure. That's the next step. get some funding for something so I can employ GIMPs to do that part of it.
We all need GIMPs.
That's the aim. That's the aim, GIMPs.
What is what would you so consider like as your kind of main for, or you wouldn't maybe, I guess.
Whatever just, I'm doing at the time, wow. To be honest. It kind of okay. depends. The actually from doing Arts Council applications where you've got to pin yourself down a bit, I suppose I mean I also do facilitation work, which is like being an artist facilitator with a lot of youth groups.
Okay.
Like I've done stuff. I did stuff last summer. Actually, I started doing a lot of comic work. You end up being asked to do things that your most recent work is, like shows. So I did a actually great project last summer with a group, an adult literacy group up in Drogheda, where they had just finished. So they're all a group in their kind of 40s and 50s, and they just done their junior cert. And I did a week of kind of writing and storytelling. They'd done no creative writing before. And at the end of the week, they all had written a short story that I then took away and made into a comic. And which I loved, actually. It was really interesting getting stories out of people and what was important to them, and them giving you all the backgrounds to things. So I did that, and then I did a project with the lab just before, actually over Christmas, I suppose, as well, where they were doing a show by a film artist called Jackie Irvine, and she had done a film piece that was a reaction to, do you know Hogarth stuff, the Prince? Hogarth, he's the.
I don't think so.
He's you should actually because
well, maybe
he's,
I do.
You should. He's basically the. He's kind of like not the first comic book artist, but you could put him in there.
Okay.
He would have been around the 1750s, and he first of all would have done portraits, but then he would do a series of paintings that told a story. They're usually moral tales, and they're very critical of society at the time. And they were so popular that people used to make prints out of them. And then the prints would be sold and he'd make no money out of it. So he actually brought in a lot of copyright laws to protect himself. He became a publisher to print them. And like they were being printed in thousands and thousands at the time. So it was in London. Or I think he is London based. But his most his first kind of famous one would have been a story called The Harlot's Progress. You should look at them. They're incredible. And basically Emma had bought a whole series of his prints after doing an exhibition of his. So the lab, which is the Dublin City Council Arts Office, we're looking at that. We're looking at the fact that their location on Foley Street was the old prostitutes district of Dublin, the Monto, which when it was around from the 1860s to 1920s was the biggest red light district in Europe. It's massive. Like something like 1,600 women were there at any one time. So they were looking at all this and then the fact that there were definitely women being trafficked into Dublin at the time. So they asked Jackie Irvine to create a film piece kind of as a reaction to that. That film piece was then shown with the Hogarth prints, which show this young girl coming to the city. Straight away, she's preyed on by kind of a pimp and by a madame. She becomes, and it's kind of downhill from there, really. She becomes a rich man's mistress, then she becomes a prostitute, then she's put in jail, then she dies and no one cares. And then even at her wake, people are acting scandalously. But everyone kind of gets it in the neck from Hogarth. Like, you've got judges doing stuff, bad stuff. You've got the clergy being disreputable. His stuff is incredible. And I went in with a group of young people from Northwall, and I'd explained all to them, talked to them about comics, they were doing drawing, then I brought them in to show them the film and then the prints. And they were crazy about the prints because there are so many stories in them and the stories aren't that far away from what anyone knows and what's going on right now. So we then went upstairs and discussed about what was happening at the moment and what Foley Street had been. And so I then produced a comic. I should have brought it actually. It's like a brochure for the exhibition that is a comic. Where they came up with three characters, so one character from the Hogarth prints, one character from kind of a girl who'd been trafficked into Dublin, and a robot, like one of the guys had drawn a robot that was so deadly I had to include it somewhere. So the robot kind of tells you about Foley Street and its background, so he was an information bot. But we made up, so it was a poster and it was also a brochure to go with the exhibition. So the idea is that it explained, I mean the film piece is very much kind of very like contemporary art that you would not know what it's about if you don't know the background. So it was very interesting because they got very into it once they knew all this backstory. So the comic I did with them really explains all that. So that's, it's funny, so that's kind of the art facilitation work goes into that. And I've done set design, I've done pop-up books actually. I used to do work with a group up in Ballymun called Briar, and we do digital storytelling, so that would be everything from animation to film to comics to whatever they were interested in really, I suppose. But yeah, so I suppose I definitely work in a variety of things, and it's whatever is most interesting, really.
Was
that day?
Speaking of kind of influences, what kind of is there any kind of cartoonists at the minute, kind of contemporary comics that?
I don't know. I suppose I read a lot of comics. Yeah, been reading. What did I get most recently? Hicksville. You read that?
I think I have that and have not read it.
So brilliant. I read it because actually, do you know what's really odd? I used to read a lot of comics growing up. We read like Asterix and Tintin, we used to get, and then 2000 AD. And actually, when I lived in New Zealand that time after college, this, for some reason, the Central Library in Auckland has a huge, or had, even at the time, a huge graphic novel section. And I used to work in a place that was two buses away, so I'd often be waiting in the city centre for the second bus. I used to go in there, borrow a few books and go. And I read, I would say, like, basically usually the contents of kind of the indie shelf in any comic book. I read all of them there and was introduced to a lot of stuff I'd never heard of, because a lot of my brothers read a lot of comics. So between us, actually, this, I share a studio with two of my brothers. We just have like shelves of comics. Some of their ones I won't read, some of my ones they really won't read. But then we share a lot of ones in the middle we'd all read. So everything from like Powers, which I love, to like I still read a lot of Tintin, Asterix.
Tintin.
Yeah, well, I mean, I lived in France for a bit and I speak French, so I'd read a lot of French BD as well. So like everything from Spirou Fantasio to. Got Lucky Luke, who I think is great. And some of the Lucky Lukes are written by Goscinny, who would have written Asterix, and they're incredible. They're really good. Then I'd read, so Hicksville, that one by Dylan Horrocks, which I read in Auckland 10 years ago, and I'd never seen since. It's just come back into print. So it's a really odd one. It's all about comics and this town that is kind of the magical world centre of comics. You should read it.
Yeah,
you'd love it. It's really, it's hard. Actually, it's hard to figure out what's going on at first, but it's very, very good. I think it's brilliant. What else have I been reading? I was reading the Jason Lute stuff, Berlin, City of Stones. And actually, I like the two Berlin books, his City of Stones, and I forget the second one. But then I read Jar of Fools.
Right.
Don't know if you've read it. This is his first book. It's set in like an American city. Have you read the Berlin ones?
No.
No, they're really good. But the Jar of Fools is brilliant. He's kind of like, he's drawn black and white American artist. And the two Berlin ones are set in kind of post-World War II. They're kind of between the wars where, I suppose, you have the rise of nationalism and you have communists and fascists fighting in the street. But they're good stories, but the Jar of Fools is probably, I suppose, closer to his own world, and it's excellent. It's brilliant. It's like just a great novel in itself of Persepolis, which is great. I was reading a lot of, what's her name, Ruta Madan, you know, the Exit Wounds?
Oh, yes, no,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah, yes. That one, which is I like. And then from that, I bought her collection of short stories called Jamilti. And a couple of them are just brilliant. A couple of them are awful, actually. But then a load, which is good about short stories.
Yeah.
They're really mixed bag. But a couple of them are, really brilliant. Who else did I get? I don't know. I do buy quite a lot of comics, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot. And a variety. Depends what I'm into at the time.
Aside from comics, I did want to ask you, speaking of production design earlier, you did work on as a production designer for Dan and Bex, is that true? Because like Dan and Bex is one of the kind of few actually good, in my opinion, Irish TV shows, and I just wondered from the point of view of someone who's involved with a show like that, of, you know, why, or maybe you don't agree with me, but... So I kind of think that Irish TV shows in general are comedies, maybe are quite bad. And if you had any kind of thoughts on that.
Thoughts on that? I don't know. I mean, I actually, until a couple of years ago, I didn't have a telly for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, so like, I suppose 7 or 8 years. So I've only just recently reappreciated how crap it is. Because I've been able to see it. Actually, I mean, for me, that's just work-wise. It's a brilliant job. Mm. That job was great because... I don't know how I started working on it. I started working on, after they made the first few kind of pilot episodes, the person who stepped in as temporary producer was someone I knew, so that's how I started, and then I worked on it from there on. But it's, in terms of production design, it's a very simple job. Everything's a fixed camera focusing on really small areas. Dave, who writes and directed and was in Dan and Bex, is ridiculously easy to work with. He's very good. He knows exactly what he wants. He's very relaxed, but has such a definite idea of what he wants. It's actually just to work with, that's unusual, and very, very easy. Martina Nyland, who'd generally be the producer for the series, is brilliant. She's one of the best producers. She would have produced Once.
Oh, yes.
And all that kind of stuff, so she's great. I suppose all the people involved in it were great. It just, I don't know, working on it was absolutely dreamlike, and then I remember watching going, that's actually really good, you know, because when you're on set, you don't really see so much, but when you're the production designer, you do a lot of work beforehand, a little bit of work at the beginning, then you spend a lot of time sitting around eating a lot of food and falling asleep in chairs is what I do a lot, or drawing my comic, which is what I used to spend a lot of time doing, and then you do lots of work at the end. But yeah, I'm not. I actually don't know why it seems so difficult. I know that when I read the scripts, I thought these are actually pretty good and very, very simple and well written. Like a lot from doing production design, a lot of people who write scripts can't write, or are very bad at writing because they're directors who are having to write their own scripts. And if you read a really well written script, it's usually a playwright. It's just a funny thing. It's just, but their ones were really well done, very well done. Like Dave Coffey's good at write, is a good writer. He's really got ideas. And then Neil Rowland, who is the script supervisor, is excellent as well. He's really brilliant actually, and very funny. So I assume that's that definitely has an influence on it. But yeah, I don't know. Just the whole being involved in it was great. And then it's really lovely to work on something where you'd actually like to show it to people afterwards. Yeah, yeah.
Did I see your name on, I may be incorrect, did I see your name on Daily Strife?
Oh, Daily Strife, yeah.
Storyland.
Yeah.
What would you call it, I guess, episodes?
They're kind of webisodes, I suppose. Yeah, so I worked on, like, I suppose I'm on it as a designer. The production design part of it was really tiny. It was more, I actually did some graphics and stuff work for them because they needed like a logo design and some of that kind of stuff. So I was doing some illustration bits for it. And then the art department bit of it, which is very simple on that. It was, I mean, the things are kind of, they're so low budget that they keep all that to a minimum to try and put some more money into maybe equipment and other bits and pieces. Yeah. So that was interesting just because of where it was going to be, how it was going to be broadcast. But I know Cecilia McAllister, who wrote and directed it, she would actually have done it to quite a high quality. It's kind of just the way she works, really. Yeah. And probably for a higher quality than they would have expected. But yeah, no, that was a fun thing to work on. That was recently enough, actually. And actually, it was part of it was filmed here. Reminds me of, yeah, it's the last time I was in here. It was for that. They were filming a scene in one of the rooms upstairs.
Oh, okay.
A bedroom scene. So yeah, that was different. And obviously, actually, a lot less money involved in it. But not, I mean, not kind of asking you to work for free or anything. It was a nice thing to work on. Good crew, good crack, trying to film in the snow, people crashing cars. Yeah, usual list of mad stuff happening. Yeah.
It was definitely one of my favourites from this year's.
Very different.
So I'm kind of disappointed that it didn't make it through the next round.
I thought it was really good. I thought she did it really well. And she had written, so I'd read most of them. No, maybe I'd only read the two and I knew the ideas for the following four. And she definitely had written it with a proper build-up in mind, which with showing two episodes kind of should have been enough, but I do think it can be really hard to, I think it was a hard sell actually for what it was. I thought it was really good.
Yeah,
I really liked it and I thought it was really interesting and the whole six episodes would have been fantastic. But I don't know, it seems, I don't know if people vote for kind of a different style of thing. That's interesting. You liked it because I thought they were great, but they didn't go through, I thought I can kind of see that this isn't what people vote for, or I don't know. Yeah, but a lot of it is building up your fan base and people you
know.
That's
true. And
marketing,
is,
you know.
Yeah, for that particular type of thing, it is kind of like a get all your friends on Facebook to vote.
I think so,
which is disappointing because definitely in my own personal opinion, some of the ones that got through were awful. But anyway,
well, I'm biased. Well, no, I agree. I did think it was really good.
Yeah.
But when it didn't get through, I could kind of think I could kind of see why that might happen or how that might happen. But
well, in closing,
yep.
I just wanted to ask, like, being a TV production designer and animator, what are the chances of a flatmates animated TV show?
I was thinking about it. Actually, I think it could be a really good idea. What I was going to do first was do this graphic novel this summer, and then while writing that and drawing that, I was thinking of writing a mini comic that's one full episode, as opposed to obviously the weekly episodes are kind of one thing happens over two pages. I have an idea for a summer episode for them that would be a 90 it's a 60 page book, so 60 page kind of size, and then once I had that, I figured I could try writing episodes. Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it as a web series. But then, yeah, I suppose it's there definitely as an idea, but it's after the next two things I'm doing, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, not that it's going to happen. Not definitely going to happen, but I do think it could work, actually, and it could definitely work as a, like, I was looking at, you know, some of those 5 or 10 minute shows in the evenings. I'm thinking they would probably suit that quite well. and get someone who's better than me in animation to animate it.
Well, I hopefully that comes to fruition.
Okay. you can charge commission on it.
Well, thanks very much for talking to us.
And, not at all.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks a million.
And we're back. That was a good interview, Liam. Good work.
Thanks.
You're definitely picking up. Your game's picking up. You're getting better.
I think people would like to hear you do more interviews.
Me too. I wasn't invited. I saw the emails back and forth.
Well, someone has work commitments, so they can't turn for.
Not all of us are on the dole, Liam. You should be on the dole.
I'm not on the dole.
You should be
just
though.
For the record,
can you not get like some dole?
I am actually entitled to the dole, but I don't know. I feel bad about it.
That's the last time I'm lending you 50 quid. Like, you're going to be getting 200 quid a week. Why are you borrowing money off me? Any news this weekend?
No, there's not really that much happening in the Irish comic stuff. So there's a lot happening that we will be talking about in our next talk show.
2 weeks.
Yeah, there's kind of nothing relevant for now. You got anything?
I do. I just want to have a shout out to my friend, John Marshall, who has a new webcomic out, marzipancomics.com. Which is kind of a comic, a web comic, which is, it's kind of random, but it's very good. He's, like I said, he's a friend of mine, so take that with a pinch of salt. It could be terrible, but I'll have to say otherwise. But no, it's really good, so check it out. Other than that, I don't really have anything else. I have been reading a lot of comics this month.
Oh, really?
So, like, in 2 weeks' time, I'm gonna have, I got a box of comics. I know you had a trouble with the volcano.
Volcano was delaying all my comics.
But my Amazon order arrived on Wednesday, like, with the dark cloud. You know, my plane was just, come on!
The parcel was just, like, singed.
Yeah, exactly.
Smoke coming from it.
Yeah, yeah, so I definitely have a lot of stuff to talk about. Mainly okay. Spider-Man. He's still good. Yeah, so I guess we'll just sign off. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll be reviewing some comics. Maybe some movies. Is there any movies?
Possibly. I don't know. Who knows what the future holds.
All I can guarantee
you. I'm certainly looking forward to it.
It's going
to
be a smorgasbord of awesomeness. Come back. See you in 2 weeks.